Once upon a time on this project, yo, I'ma have to wreck a whole shay. I heard a whole say you a favorite rapper.
So what?
So I had to slap her. And violate you, a Muslim drinking brew. Your nigga ain't no Mac 10, he's a 22, I seen you. You ain't say shit in ATL, Q. I like that diamond charm, I might cuff it then sell it out like you sold Cam and Threat. A year ago, you wasn't talking shit about the West. Guess you knew your shit was done, plus the one got you cable. Who banging? You ain't banging shit but the table in a circle, mad. Ain't got no choice but to fight. Ain't none of y'all motherfuckers got a chance on the mic. Anytime you come out, Joe, I'ma talk about you. Until you let that bitch in you, walk about you. Any last words before I hit the switch from the immortal words of one? A bitch is a...
So we're starting off with that common song, The Bitch and You. I didn't know we were going to go straight to John Cena. That wasn't about him? Oh, my bad.
Well, we were going to put a Tribe Called Quest song in. This is what I want to ask you. Best Tribe Called Quest song. Very hard to do because they've had them all.
Let me see. Some scenarios up there, but I don't know if I could say that's a straight up Quest song, because Busta Rhymes had a lot to do with that.
That doesn't hold up over time. I mean, it's good.
I think it does, but I think a lot of it has to do with Busta.
And the video. I mean, that video back in the day was like one of the best videos ever.
Yeah, that's true. I always liked the jazz.
Jazz.
Not Hawaiian Sophie.
Yeah.
The jazz, the Tribe Called Quest song, and you know, I was trying to vote over here. You snuffed me out a few times, but. Electric Relaxations, right?
That's
up
your favorite one?
It's up there. That's a jam, dude.
Yeah, but I mean, you're forgetting like the one song that like me and you always used to go crazy for, like their first like hit song.
What, Can I Kick It? Or when he's up on the building in the video.
Yeah, we like the song so much we can't even remember it. I was always partial to Vibes and Stuff because he talks about fallen rappers, and Q-Tip really shined on that song. But okay, so the best album they came out with.
Second one,
yeah. You remember the name of the second one?
Let's see.
It's not People's Instinctive Past. No, that's the first rhythm. One. That's the first one. It's the Low End Theory, dude.
The Low End Theory, yes.
Yeah, man. I'm the one that had a bottle of wine. Where you at, Nate?
Butter was good.
Butter.
It's like butter. It's like butter, baby. All
right.
Not no parquet. Not no margarine.
Simply butter.
Strictly butter.
Baby. Oh, strictly, see? There you go. That's where the wine kicks in. So we have a...
He's off ho. My name's Malik.
What's his name was good in?
Fife?
Yeah, the problem with Fife was that he was really good in that second album, but then he started, like, really kind of resorting to, like, if you look at his rhymes, he always talked about, like, I'm like this or I'm like that, or just really, like, really weak, like, you know, kind of...
A lot of dated comparisons. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I'm out like Buster Douglas, piece to MC Trouble.
Well, that was a good one, though. That's off of Vibes and Stuff.
Right, but still.
But I mean, true, yeah.
It's a little bit dated.
Yeah, very dated. And he always kind of... That was his crutch. He always, like, compared himself to something else. It's kind of like Twin Hype when they did that song called My Metaphors.
With a bunch of similes.
And everything with similes. And, like, I remember we used to, like, Twin Hype a lot. And then we're sitting there listening. We're playing... probably playing Metroid or something. And, I really like My Metaphors, and then I think I kind of paused the game. I'm like, wait a minute, those are all flipping similes, dude.
I think we figured it out when I think we were actually playing Ring King, and is when I knocked you out of the ring, and you had an epiphany.
why do you always gotta bring that up,
man? Because that was a moment right there.
That was a moment. That's a moment that I'll always remember.
I do.
Well, you gotta give me credit. For like not introducing you, but like making you realize that Metroid was actually a good game, because I remember you when Nintendo first came out, you would play all these games. I was like, what about this game Metroid? And you're like, oh, I can't get anywhere with it. And there's because there's this one room that you couldn't get to in the first stage, and you'd have to bomb your way up and get in there
to the floor.
Yeah, and then not bomb your way through the floor, but you had to bomb up to like there was like a small little gap, and you had to bomb your way up to that gap, get over that gap, and then go back into that, you know, and then stand up and go into the door. And you pretty much, you weren't going anywhere until, like, we, like, actually, like, figured out that you could sit there and bomb. I took the time to try this game out. And then after that, we went off running with that. And it started a glorious career in terms of NES playing. So We have Better Have My Donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. We're back from Moose Gill number 67. And we're here to talk about a Raw. Actually, two good programs in a row. SmackDown, I thought, was very good. And then this Raw speaks for itself. You finally saw one of your dreams come true. And all I got to say is that Aaron Paul should show up to Raw more often. Because when Aaron Paul shows up,
Dolph Ziggler wins.
Yeah. But, I mean, the first hour of that Raw... very well done. I mean, it's kind of sad. Like, I wasn't in Twitter jail, but I put myself on Twitter jail because now that I have UVerse, which sucks because I just watch wrestling totally different now because it starts at 8 o'clock and I can't watch it while it's happening. Everybody's talking on Twitter about it. So I didn't want to know if CM Punk came back. I didn't want to know about it beforehand. I wanted to kind of mark out, you know, if you will. Mm-hmm. And, so CM Punk doesn't show up, but I think, WWE had to do some things because CM Punk didn't show up, and they put in a lot of storylines. They let some people shine, and I think you know who I'm talking about. I think what you're saying about that Elimination Chamber, I finally saw that come to fruition with Seth Rollins. So let's just jump into there. Even though there's a lot of good matches before that, but you know, there's a moment in time. All Whitney Houston aside, or whatever it was. Did she sing One Moment in Time? Who sang One Moment in Time? Give me one moment in time. In the bad 90s.
I think that could have been.
Yeah. And see, I was the first one to say that Whitney Houston could not sing. And me and you were the first people to say that Pink could not sing as well.
Well, we witnessed that firsthand.
We witnessed firsthand in the...
I don't necessarily say Whitney can't sing. I just don't like her music.
Whitney can't sing.
Okay.
She's terrible. Whoa. I mean, she's like the John Cena of divas.
Whoa. Whatever. I'm not gonna.
Wait, you gonna stand for Whitney Houston?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying
crack is whack or what?
No, I'm saying, hey, she's too rich to smoke crack. I'm just saying her songs suck. It's like Mariah Carey. I wouldn't say she couldn't sing.
Mariah Carey can sing. Yeah, she makes bad songs. Whitney Houston cannot sing though, okay. And I'll say that.
Okay.
And the other thing too, which really makes me mad, what really made me mad this week was, you know, Pink sang at the Oscars and she sang "Somewhere Over the Rainbow," and she was terrible at it. I mean, just horrible at it.
Right.
So I'm driving my girls.
I'll take your word for it because I don't watch award shows.
Well, I mean, dude,
look at where you're at. After you finish your Olympic marathon, you watch the Oscars. You're in a house full of boys.
I'm in a house full of women, so I got to watch what the women watch. And but the thing is, like, so Monday comes rolling around, and you know, I'm not like your parents that just listen to like Rockin' Robin and all this 50 music and stuff, and you're like, oh, I like the 50 music. I'm like, dude, what the hell are you talking about? I was like, I'm the one that got you, you know, we had a discussion about Tribe Called Quest. I'm the one that got you into rap, dude, because you're like a big-time flipping rockabilly fan, you know, like singing like Jackson 5 here and there.
There's nothing wrong with the Jackson 5.
Nothing wrong with the Jackson 5, but, you know, you're singing like Rockin' Robin and like the Monster Mash and stuff. Man, you used to nut all over the Monster Mash, dude.
Nah, I don't know if I'd go that far, but that was
you did listen to 1950s music
back in the day.
Yeah, and why
and
is that?
I've been through a desert on a horse with no name.
Well, that's a good song.
Hey.
That's a very good song.
There you go.
But KRS-One, why is that?
I also listened to a lot of country at the time too.
You did, and that was on your upbringing, and I slowly got you out of your shell, and you know, you've discovered greater and newer things, and made you the man that you are today, dude, with your coach shirt on, coach. But the whole thing is, so like when I drive my girls to school, like I don't listen to the music that I want to listen to. I listen to the music that they want to listen to. It's a lot of top 40 stuff, you know, because it's just like, you know, hey, because you know, I remember like sitting in the backseat of a car and listening like to Paul Anka. You know, I mean, Paul Anka had, like, some song, like, man, I don't even remember what Paul Anka came out with, but I used to have to listen to Paul Anka all the time. I was like, man.
Like, I wonder, I why wonder.
No, that's a good song. Yeah. Paul Anka didn't sing that song.
You sure?
Yeah. That was Runaway.
Yeah.
I don't think
Anka?
I don't think Paul Anka sang that song. Do we have to stop it and look at Medusa?
No, I'm not gonna dispute. In my mind, it sounds like that's his song.
But anyway, so so here we are. Like I'm listening to music and stuff. So they have the DJs come on, and man, like I don't know why me and you aren't DJs because these DJs they're flipping terrible, dude. They're all like just straight like it's not strictly butter, but they're just like so like flipping vanilla. They're like, I could listen to the Pink sing that song the whole time through. I was like, are you flipping serious, dude? Like, why are you jocking Pink so much, dude? I'm like, are you getting paid by Pink to say how great she was, like, singing this flipping song? I mean, she was terrible at it. But it just, like, shows you, like, what, you know, when you have, like, people that don't take a stand on anything and just, like, kind of follow the status quo, that's how you kind of get the John Cena's and you get everything else. But, so, let's jump into Seth Rollins and that Shield match, which everybody went crazy for, rightfully so. That thing where he did, where he jumped out of the ring and landed on his feet, like, what, three times?
Yeah.
About three or four times?
Yeah.
That was, like, the first time in a long time where it was something that I've never saw before. And every time that he flipped out of that ring, he landed on his feet. Now, you know me. You know I cringed every time he did that, because if I was to ever even try that, what would happen? What would happen to me?
Both your ankles
would break. My ankles would pop, dude. Broke your ankle, son. So, but that was, like, the first time that I've seen that where, you know, I haven't seen something like that since I started watching Shawn Michaels and saying, like, you know, Shawn Michaels is doing, like, new things that I never saw before with regularity. And if this guy can piggyback off what he did, and I didn't see Elimination Chambers. So I don't know if he did those same type of spots.
Yeah, yeah, he did, and he did the...
So that's what he did, right?
The spot with the top rope, I don't know, back suplex where he backflipped and landed on his feet also. Yeah, no, it was crazy, and yeah, not... Yeah, like I said, when he gets it rolling like that, it is very reminiscent of what Daniel Bryan does, right? The energy that he has, the athleticism, creativity. I think he could be the next guy, and I think he's probably better on the mic too.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the funny thing. Like, if anybody's going to step in that Shawn Michaels role, like, for a long time we thought that Daniel Bryan can do that, but Daniel Bryan's his own entity, you know, and CM Punk is his own guy. Like, he doesn't. You know, but you have a guy that's athletic as that, as, say, Seth Rollins is. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, he can be the next Shawn Michaels, but I guess I am saying that. Like, out of all the guys, like, because as wrestling fans, at least for me, I'm always looking for, we've talked about this before, I'm always looking for the good small champion. You know, and CM Punk doesn't really kind of fit that role because his moveset is a very rough moveset. Mm-hmm. It's like a Poresu moveset.
Yeah, you don't strikes think, and, yeah. He is small, but you don't think of him as a small guy.
Yeah.
Because it's not, and he's not, like, super athletic, right? Like, it's not, like, a bunch of high-flyer stuff, right? He has a little bit of that in his game, but that's not, like, what his, like, the majority of his moveset is. But Seth Rollins is, yeah.
And the funny thing is with that match was that the one guy that you expected to shine didn't shine. I mean, Roman Reigns, he has some good spots here and there. But, I mean, Dean, I thought Dean was great. And I thought he was really good with just the stuff that he did, like, that clothesline he did. It was like a, kind of like a uppercut clothesline, I mean, that he did against not Eric Rowan, but the other guy.
Harper,
yeah. I mean, you know what spot I'm talking about, right? Where he did that flipping kind of power clothesline where he kind of did the uppercut clothesline and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and then even, like, when Rowan had him in kind of the double fist headlock and stuff, and, like, you know, Ambrose is kind of talking to Harper saying, come on in and stuff. And I was kind of thinking during that time, I was like, why over the past couple months have I not, like, really liked the Shield that much? And I think a big part of it was because Ambrose really just kind of came like this. Ambrose used to be, like, really, like, calm and calculating, and then he just went off the deep end. Mm-hmm. And that's why I kind of stopped liking the Shield because of that, because, like, it's funny, like, Ambrose was kind of the leader of the Shield, kind of de facto he was the leader of the Shield, and then Reigns became really big, which is fine. I have no problem with that. But when you had, like, Ambrose kind of becoming like a, you know...
A loose cannon?
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't like him in that role. So that's kind of where I am with the whole thing. And I just kind of wanted to, you know, see... Because this looks like it's going to kind of end the Shield. And it was funny, like, you thought that either Ambrose would, like, turn, but, you know, the architect, like Michael Cole, like, to try to bring out at the end, you know, to try to put this role in Seth Rollins. He's the one that kind of turns. I thought it worked out pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It was kind of weird. It didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me why all of a sudden Rollins decided just to walk out and then stand there and watch. I mean, I can understand, like, the way they've been building it, like, Ambrose has been kind of out there or hasn't been there when they've needed him. But, like, it's always been really tight between Rollins and Reigns. And I think the obvious thing is, like, you know, we know Reigns is going to get this babyface push. I think it's pretty obvious Ambrose is going to be the heel. But the kind of question mark is which direction is Rollins going to go. And kind of it seemed like they'd been playing him to be a babyface, and I think he could get over big time as one. But this was the first time that they kind of made it look more like he was going to be the heel. Like, I don't really know why he walked out at that point in time that he did. Like, it seemed like he was saying, because when Reigns came up and talked to him in the aisle, he was like, well, I went to tag and you weren't there. But if that's the case, that would have been the first time that Reigns wasn't there. So I don't know why he would all of a sudden not be there for Reigns. Like, Rollins and Ambrose, yeah, sure. Like, Ambrose has been in and out, so I can see where there's some friction there. But, yeah, it just didn't make any sense unless they're going to come back with something where Rollins says, like, you know, I stepped out of the way so I could try to let you guys work it out and try to see if you guys could bring it together. And maybe that's the direction they go. And if so, yeah, then that kind of makes some sense. But it's really hard to read. And I think that's kind of one of the good things with the Shield is, like, I mean, you have a general idea of where two of those guys are going to end up. But Rollins is this real wild card. And I don't know. I think that's where it's going to be interesting. I mean, I would assume they're going to end up in some kind of three-way match at WrestleMania. I mean, I think that's probably the only thing there is for him to do. So it'll be cool to see how that plays out and who wins and what direction Seth Rollins goes in.
Now, do you feel that this was kind of, do you think it was forced because CM Punk didn't show up? I mean, you think that they had to kind of do something to kind of, not appease the fans, but you think this was kind of related because CM Punk wasn't there to kind of be on the show and they had to kind of disrupt some major storylines because they kind of had the same thing with with the Real Americans and stuff and kind of like a possible turn here and there. I mean, you think they kind of switched up the storylines because CM Punk wasn't there?
I mean, I think to a certain degree that's the case, but I don't really see that with the Shield. I think the Shield's, you know, all they need to do to appease the Chicago crowd was have the Shield wrestle the Wyatts. That was going to be enough for them, and that's enough for me. I'm happy to see that. As far as disrupting or kind of throwing a wrench into what the Shield's breakup storyline is, I don't think they needed to do that, so I'm going to assume that was in the plan all along. But yeah, I think definitely, and this kind of, we kind of ran out of time last week, so you mentioned Cesaro. I mean, I think this decision to turn Cesaro babyface and give him this push, I think that is directly affected by the fact that CM Punk isn't around right now. And I think the Usos getting that tag team title is also directly affected by the fact that CM Punk isn't there right now. I think that was a move. I think they kind of, I'm not going to say rushed it because I think the Usos have been deserving champions for a while, but usually there's a longer build between, like, they really made the New Age Outlaws, transitional champions, right? And usually I would think that they would hold the belts a little bit longer, but I think they knew that they could appease the Chicago crowd by giving the Usos the belt there, and I think they fast-tracked that title changing hands. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I mean, you're fine with it, but are you happy with it? I mean, because kind of the...
Yeah, because to me, the Usos are probably only going to hold that belt until WrestleMania and drop it to the Wyatts. That would be my... Or maybe not Mania, maybe it'll be a little after, but they're just there to be the babyface team and get their run until the Wyatts take the tag team belts. That's how I would predict what's going to happen. So, yeah, I think I was fine with it. But the thing is, the Usos, they paid their dues more than pretty much any other team. And I think they got overlooked more than anybody else. I got no problem with them giving the belt now.
Well, see, last week on Moveskill 66, you like that? We kind of talked about a little bit about Dolph Ziggler, like, you know, kind of about the same type of thing. Dolph Ziggler paid his dues and he never got the run that he did. Are you happy with the Usos being a transitional champion? I mean, I'm just kind of going like, well, what's next? You know, and I'm glad that you brought up the Wyatt family because I really don't know where those tag team belts are going to go after that. But, I mean, are you happy with, like, if your theory proves correct that they're going to be a transitional champion? I mean, because they are deserving of a run. And it's kind of funny. They've had a better run without the tag team belts than with the tag team belts. Now, the jury's still out because we haven't seen them do it. You know, they're on main event. And they're gonna, you know, they're going to defend them against the New Age Outlaws. But if we would have heard about it, if they would have lost, any of the Jadlocks, there would have been a spoiler already about it. It's kind of funny. I think last week the Outlaws came back, and I was doing kind of the fast forwarding because I wanted to get it over with and stuff. And I actually kind of did it this week too. I kind of wanted to see their entrance again because I was kind of like, you know, I don't know how much longer I'm going to see this entrance one more time. Uh-huh. And so I kind of PMD'd that, and that's of course talking about Eric Sermon and Parrish Smith when they broke up as EMPMD, and PMD came out with an album called "I Saw It Coming" and all that good stuff. But are you happy with that in terms of them being a transitional champion? Because you're kind of talking about Dolph Ziggler, how like the payoff was never there, and he didn't have a long enough run. Do you feel that same way about the Usos?
Yeah, I'll be fine with it because I think that the Wyatt family are a legitimate tag team. And I think...
And this would be Harper and Rowan.
Right. Yeah. I think they're legit, and I think there's been a good build, and they rarely ever lose anyway. So I don't think... it would suck if the Usos were just to drop it to another team, that was just going to drop it to another team, and they were going and passing it around. But I think when they do lose the belts, and like I assume it's going to be to the Wyatts, I think it's going to mean something. So yeah, I don't really have a big problem with it. I mean, I think it would kind of suck if it happens at Mania. So I'll say probably that they'll hold on to it through Mania. But if they have a good run and maybe it ends at SummerSlam or something like that, then I think they did better than just being transitional champions.
Well, I don't think it's going to last through SummerSlam. I think they're going to drop it at WrestleMania.
I think it's going to happen at Mania.
Yeah, and here's the whole thing is that they paid their dues, and while they were paying their dues, they're pretty much, I mean, they had a pretty good batting average. I mean, I think they were hitting like 800, 900 in terms of how many times they lost. So, I mean, we've had like probably about 7-8 months where they like always won. And I remember the time that they would lose, I was like, wait a minute. And I think I would put that on Twitter. I'm like, wait, the Usos lost. I mean, like, these guys never lose. Yeah. And it's kind of funny because we always talk about like, hey, like, we always want to see the guys that we like get their push, and these guys have gotten their push, and it's kind of like, but it's been a very quiet push because everything they've done has been the right way. And I think the only thing that hasn't happened with them is that they haven't really had the mic time to really develop themselves. But I mean, they've had a very good push for the past 6-8 months, and I've been very happy with what they've done. And they finally reached the top of the mountain, to steal from Michael Cole, or maybe it was JBL. So I'm okay with what it is.
Yeah, and like I'll say, like you, since you addressed it, I mean, they're not a complete like dominant entity in wrestling because of exactly what you said. They're still not great on the mic, so that's where I'm glad that they get the respect that they can become champions. And if it ends up that they're transitional champions, I'm kind of okay with that because there's still like that one element to their game that's missing. Now, if they were like just like the shit on the microphone, then I would think, yeah, then they should probably get like a really extended run. But that is still like the one kind of weakness in their game, and that was where I had a problem with Dolph Ziggler, because there was no weakness in Dolph Ziggler's game, and that's why it really sucked that he got that short run. With these guys, I'm glad they got their run, but you know, I could still, if I'm gonna try to be devil's advocate, you know, there's still a couple things that they could get better at in terms of their overall thing. In the ring, they're as good as it gets right now. But there is that one element, and I think that's a key element to being a champion. You got to be able to cut a promo, and they haven't been able to prove that. You know, I think sometimes with the tag team champions, they can skate a little bit with less mic skills. But that would be the one thing that if they had these knockout promos every time, that it would be really hard to deny them like a lot of extended tag team championship runs.
So is Rowan and Harper, I mean, are they legitimate tag team champions?
Well,
I mean,
because Bray's, the whole thing is Bray's going to carry the promos.
Yeah. So he's kind of serving
and
as...
Harper's actually, you know, yeah. I mean, he can't cut a promo on his own.
But he can cut it in the ring.
And he's adding something to Bray's promos. He's adding like a new element that keeps it fresh just by him talking a little bit. And that's all they really need, because Bray can carry it on the mic. Like, you know, you've had tag teams in the past that couldn't cut promos, but then they usually had a manager.
Like Mr. Fuji.
Right.
And Paul Bearer that they inducted into the Hall.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
So I was watching that today. because I had to watch it today real fast and stuff, and then they had the kind of the whole Paul Bearer thing going, like, oh yes, and my youngest daughter, she's like, what was that? She's like, you like this guy? I'm like, yeah, I respect him.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know if I like him, but I respect him.
Right.
So in terms of the way the tag team division is now, because we were talking about the tag team division being really strong probably about 3 months ago. I think if you look at it now, it's actually kind of weak, I think. You know, because Goldust and Cody, they haven't been around for the past couple weeks. And then Primetime Players are gone. Mm-hmm. The Real Americans have their own thing going. The Shield is kind of out of it.
Disbanding.
So what teams do you have left? And I don't see you having a lot of teams from the tag team division right now.
Los Matadors, baby.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, so you have Los Matadors, you have the Usos,
mm-hmm.
and then that's pretty much it.
Yeah, no, well, but I think they've shown that they can rebuild a tag team division pretty quickly. I'm sort of okay with them doing what they're doing. I wouldn't necessarily, you know, in a perfect world, I wouldn't split up this many tag teams this fast. I think you could really easily turn the Rhodes Brothers heel. I think that would work, and then have a Usos v. Rhodes feud. I think that would work pretty well.
But I think you're going to have the Rhodes brothers go against each other in WrestleMania, maybe.
I don't know. They're all saying that that's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen anymore?
Yeah, because it sounds like there's too many, like, teams that are splitting, and then those teams are going to end up fighting at WrestleMania or something. You know, Rybacksel, you know, I mean, there's no great shakes, but, I mean...
You're grabbing at straws right now.
Well, right, but, yeah. I mean... That's a team that's there.
Within fairness, you're grabbing at straws.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, it's a team that's there, and it's a team that could, I mean, you could put them in matches, and you know, it could be passable. But I think what you do is you split the, you know, whatever. I mean, I think at this point in his career, Jack Swagger is a tag team specialist. I think, you know, go ahead and split him and Cesaro, but Zeb Coulter can pull some new Real American in. Maybe he replaces him with Rusev or something, and that becomes, like, the new tag team. But they can do that on the fly. I don't think that's going to be a problem. I mean, NXT is pretty loaded. There's guys they can bring up from there. You know, it doesn't fit in with feuding with the Usos, but I think that Big E and Mark Henry have been a respectable tag team. I mean, I like watching them tag together. I don't know that would work out with Usos, per se. But I mean, I think that they could make that, put that together on the fly. So I mean, yeah, you're right. The tag team division is getting kind of thin right now because they've been splitting guys. But I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that they have other things in the works, you know, to make new teams going forward.
So you're giving the benefit of the doubt to the WWE creative, huh?
In that case, yes.
In that case, yes. So the next thing I kind of want to touch on is: are we that much of marks where Batista comes out, cuts a heel promo, and all of a sudden we're like, well, wait a minute, you know, like, I like this Batista instead of the kind of the other guy.
Did you like it?
I thought it was interesting. You know, I mean, I thought it was a good reaction to the non-reaction that he's been getting. I mean, it's a nice little wrinkle here and there. I didn't mind it. I mean, something had to be done, and I just kind of wanted to know what you thought about kind of putting him as a heel and telling everybody to stick it, pretty much.
I mean, I think it's better than what was going on, but I didn't think he cut a great heel promo. I mean, I thought it was still pretty bland. As our man Rome would say, it was blasé.
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 It wasn't, Rome didn't say that. Who's the caller that did
Blaze,
that?
Blaze is.
I know who Blaze is, yeah. But it was a caller that tried to get on the yes. smack off.
Right.
And he got run.
But the drop still remains.
Yeah.
He drops that blasé a lot.
And I'm waiting for that blasé drop. Yeah.
But I think it is. I think it is kind of blasé. I mean,
blasé.
Blasé. I don't see. I mean, I wasn't really interested in anything Batista was doing. I didn't think that anything he said was earth-shattering or original. But I think he works better as a heel just because people can't stand him. I mean, you cannot keep pushing this guy as, like, what you're trying to put as, like, the top guy in your company going out for the title as a heel when nobody anywhere can stand him. So, I mean, I thought that was a no-brain decision. They had to do it to save face, really. because I think the whole Batista experiment's been a flop. So, I mean, yeah, it makes sense, but it didn't, for me, it didn't generate any new interest.
So if he goes throughout, like, so, of course, his first tackling dummy is your boy, Dolph Ziggler. And if he starts going through all the kind of, like, the fan favorites and stuff here and there, and it leads up to WrestleMania, I think he still have the same pile of garbage, where it's Randy Orton versus Batista, who nobody really cares about.
Well, I mean, a lot of the speculation is this idea that it would turn into a three-way match somehow. And so, well, I mean,
I'm not getting mad at you.
You can't, but I mean, honestly, I don't think they're going to turn Randy Orton face, and I don't think you can go into WrestleMania with Orton versus Batista as heel versus heel.
So who's the third guy? Because it's not going to be Cena. It's not going to be Daniel Bryan.
It's either Punk or Bryan.
Yeah, Punk kind of comes in at the end.
Well, what do you? I mean, we've kind of danced around this. I mean, you read the Meltzer thing, right?
I did not read the Meltzer thing.
Okay, so well, you knew Punk, like Meltzer put a report that Punk was supposed to come back. Yes. Well, okay, so I'll be fair to Meltzer because I think a lot of people are.
I haven't heard anything about it.
Okay, so let's see. Sunday afternoon, Meltzer put out that he didn't say his source, but one of the top wrestlers in the company told him that he was told 100% CM Punk would be there in Chicago. So like a lot of like Twitter went nuts over the idea that Punk was supposed to come back. Meltzer, to be fair to him, he basically said, "I'm not 100% convinced, but this is a good reliable source, a top guy in WWE," and he said for sure that
Punk was John Laurinaitis.
I mean, to me it sounded like it was CM Punk. But, I mean, sorry, it sounded like it was Cena. But he just said a top guy. He didn't specifically say. And then a lot of people were killing Meltzer last night and this morning. And Meltzer came back with a statement that he talked to that source, and the source said, "They lied to me." So, like, you know, Meltzer's the messenger here. And I don't know if WWE threw a red herring out there just to generate some buzz. But, I mean, even still, it could be just a seed planted. Because I think that's why, I mean, you know, obviously Chicago's going to go nuts hoping Punk comes up anyway. But there was a lot of angst that Punk might actually show. And maybe, in my mind, you know, maybe I'm just trying to, like, rationalize and stuff. But I think that CM Punk showing up in Chicago is the obvious thing. So maybe they plant the seed here in Chicago, but further down the line, he will show up out of nowhere. Because it looks like Daniel Bryan versus Triple H, the build is happening. And I don't care to see that match, okay, and it's not because of Bryan. You know, I really don't care to see Triple H wrestle anymore. But if he is going to be in that match, I do think you need to have somebody in it. I think they need a babyface to get in that world title match, and CM Punk could be the guy. So, I don't know. I mean, I kind of was hoping that you had some thoughts on that. I would have assumed you saw it. I did retweet that Meltzer report. I thought maybe you would have seen it.
Well, when you have 544 followers,
yeah,
the timeline kind of gets muddled with a lot of things.
Down.
Yeah, I wish.
But I thought, you know, I was one of your original followers here. So,
well, I mean, but the whole problem is it's up to Twitter. You know, it's in the police report. You know, I mean, it's like I can't control who shows up. And so a lot of people that show up, I really don't care to see. So, and when you tweet, it's few and far between. So
no, my tweets are up there. My followers, I did crack 50 though.
Very good, very good, very good. Grimly BNHO, good for you.
I got some bad news for you. I'm catching up.
Well, I 500 down the line, I'm going to be there. It's funny with Twitter. Like some of the people that I followed, I was happy that they followed me, and then I look at them now like, wait a minute, like, I got 100 more followers than they do. Why am I so happy this guy's following me? I wish Twitter would have, like, kind of like a favorites where you can kind of pick the guys that you want to, you know, see when they tweet. You know, the only thing that can happen in WrestleMania, because I don't see these two heels going, and that's going to be the main event, and I don't see Cena versus Bray Wyatt being a main event. You know, usually, like, you know, you could have, like, say, a title match, right before Cena as the main match, but I just don't see Cena and Bray Wyatt being the main event for a WrestleMania. I mean, the WrestleMania has always been a title match at the end. Even if you didn't want to see it, it's like, that's all. I mean, it's like, if you want to talk about the granddaddy of them all, the granddaddy of them all always has to have the main title on the line. I just don't know how CM Punk can kind of come out of the blue, because if they go like, oh, there's going to be a mystery third guy, well, who else are they going to do? Who else are they going to bring out? They can't bring back The Rock. Hogan is going to be He's going to be the kind of the host of WrestleMania. Maybe The Miz has been kind of quiet for a while. You know, with Dean Ambrose doing his figure four.
Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, I sure would hope so, but I don't think that's going to happen
either.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I can say Damian Sandow.
Yeah,
I mean,
except for he fucking lost on main event to some jobber last week, man. That was
Damian Sandow?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he lost to flipping Sin Cara.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, and the new improved Sin Cara, by the way.
Yeah, I'm fine with Sin Cara, but for them to hold off Sandow that long and then bring him back and have him drop one with Sin Cara.
Well, here's the sad thing, was that when I saw it when that match came on, I was like, oh, Damian Sandow's going to lose this match. And that's sad when it's like, I know this guy had such a good push and he was fresh and he was doing stuff that nobody hasn't done in a long time. And now they're just like, in one night,
they squashed him.
So
I was shocked. I didn't
really think, I knew for a fact he was going to lose.
I didn't think he was going to lose that match.
The smark in me, the bitch in me, knew that he was going to, you know, word up to common, dude. The bitch in you didn't know that he was going to lose.
No. I guess I don't have enough bitch in me.
you don't. Very good. Well played.
Well played, sir. No, bravo. But I mean, I think, look.
Bravo.
Okay.
Bravo.
Hey there, Billy Neal.
Give me some.
Okay, well, let's run down real quick. Okay, let's just hypothesize here and say that there is going to be a three-way match for the title at Mania. Okay, I mean, I think CM Punk would be the obvious choice, you know, but maybe he's not going to be there. Daniel Bryan would be the other guy, but looks like he's headed down to a match with Triple H. Is there anybody else on the roster that they can put in that spot? Like, there's two guys that come to mind, and I'm not even, like, strong on these guys. One would be Dolph, but
let me say the other guy, then. I think the other guy's going to be Cesaro. That's the other guy that I would think of. I mean, that's the one guy that he... I mean, you talk about a great character. Mm. You talk about a guy that has a ton of fan support. And can people forget that Cesaro is good on the mic? I mean, he was good on the mic when he was kind of doing the whole kind of European-style U.S. champion. I mean, I really liked him in that spot.
Right.
The other guy would probably be... You know, Big E, but
that was the guy I was thinking. But I think Cesaro's a much better choice.
And then the other guy, the guy that should be there, I think, the guy that can step into a world heavyweight champion spot and have a ton of support and like have like a ton of potential, is of course going to be Roman Reigns. And those are the guys that I would want to see. I would much rather see Cesaro story wise than Roman Reigns.
Okay, so do you think they could do something like speed up the disintegration of the Shield so they could throw Reigns in that match? You think that's possible, or you think it's destined to happen at Mania?
I think the disintegration of the Shield was because CM Punk didn't show up.
They're fast-tracking it?
I think they're fast-tracking that. I think they're fast-tracking the Americans, the real Americans breaking up because they have to stir the pot. Because breaking up Young and
Titus.
And Titus doesn't have kind of the same luster as those two teams breaking up.
Yeah.
I think Cesaro, Titus isn't over. I think Titus can be over. Darren Young will never be over.
I think they messed up in the timing of splitting up primetime players. I think they should have let that team ride it out.
With the Usos, going against the Usos.
Right.
Yeah.
And because this is a time where there's nothing for either one of those guys as singles competitors. I think they should have let them ride it out as a team until past Mania. And then once they get some of all these guys that are like, you know, the part-timers coming in for Mania, for their Mania run, that's when you go and make a move like splitting up primetime players. But I think the timing is really bad for them splitting those two guys up.
Yeah. I wouldn't really even. I mean, did Benoit? Did he win the championship? He didn't win the championship at WrestleMania, did he? In the three way, was that the one where Eddie won, and then Was it?
I don't remember what.
Well, it was because it was the Royal Rumble winner. Yeah, so it was WrestleMania where they had a three-way. And so that match is a very, I mean, that's one of the better matches that I've seen.
Triple H, Benoit, Eddie?
No, Triple H, Benoit, and Shawn Michaels.
Shawn Michaels.
And we saw that match together, and that's the year that my first daughter was born.
Was that in that Santa Maria?
Was in Santa Maria, yeah. I like to say San Luis Obispo, or maybe even Napomo.
Napomo never do wells.
The Napomo never do wells. But I mean, you can put on a good match as a three way. I just don't think that with those two guys that you have right now, in terms of Randy Orton and Batista, I don't even think CM Punk can go in there and put on a good match.
I'll tell you the truth. Who the best person to just person wise put in that match is probably Rollins.
Rollins would be.
Rollins.
But I don't think they're ready to do
it. But like style wise and the element that he could bring.
I mean, what they could do is since these three guys got cheated out of the Elimination Chamber, what they could do is they could have a three way to see who would be the third person to go into that three way match as a main event. I mean, you could do that. And then you have kind of the whole thing where you have this brutal match of the three guys, the three guys in the Shield facing each other, and then you have one guy overcome and win the championship. As of now, I just don't see how you can hang your hat on Batista winning the title or even having Randy Orton win again. Because, I mean, Randy Orton's winning this exact same way every single time, and he doesn't have that Hogan factor where Hogan would win even though you didn't want him to win and then you would hate him 10 times more because he won. I just don't think he's good enough on his own to do that. And I don't know... I mean, the one thing that comes into mind is that you have two guys from Evolution in the main event. You have a guy in Triple H who's running the company as we know it. He can be involved somehow. And if there's a guy that can come in, I even tweeted out, it's like, look, you have Ric Flair be the referee and have Triple H be the special enforcer or whatever it is, then you have Evolution right there. And the reason why I said that is because when Triple H turned on Daniel Bryan, Vince McMahon comes out and tweets, and he hardly ever tweets, but he tweets like he's like Evolution is a mystery. So that hasn't been played out yet. So I mean, if we're gonna give creative that much credit to plan all the way back then in SummerSlam, which I can't do, but you can have four of those guys involved, and you have a guy come out of nowhere and overcome all odds and win the title. I think that's the way to go because I can't see Batista being a champion. I do not see what the point of Batista being a champion is, even if he is playing a heel. There's just no one in line for him to face. And the one guy that's in line to do it, the two guys that are in line, is going to be John Cena and, say, Daniel Bryan. And so there could be that stipulation, too. If they're going to go a three-way, you have two outs. You have an out with the three-way against the Shield, and you have an out against... If Daniel Bryan beats Triple H at WrestleMania, then he can be part of. Then he can, be in the main event for WrestleMania 30 to go for the title.
So have Daniel Bryan wrestle twice that night.
Have him wrestle twice that night, and then maybe finally that's when the slow payoff happens, where he finally wins the belt in total. So maybe that's the way you go. Which one would you rather see? Would you rather see one of the guys come out from the Shield or Daniel Bryan coming out from the Triple H match? And this is like pure speculation.
Yeah.
Or this is like a fantasy league of flipping wrestling.
I like the Shield more than I like Daniel Bryan. But I think Daniel Bryan deserves it more. I think he's ready for that spot more than either of the guys for the Shield. So I would be fine with it either way. I mean, I think in my heart I'd rather have a Shield guy do it. But if it ended up being that Daniel Bryan, the build would be correct, and I'd be fully behind Daniel Bryan getting over that way.
If you want to go full like fantasy league, and something that this will never happen, but if we were the bookers, okay, not Booker T, but if we were the bookers, okay, Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker, all right, CM Punk comes out, and Brock is able to beat the Undertaker, able to beat the Streak, which will never happen. But if I'm the booker, that's what I would do. And then what I would have is I'd have Brock Lesnar, I would have CM Punk, Ryback, and
Axel.
Axel, take out Batista, where Batista can't fight anymore, right? And so they need to have a main event guy. And Paul Heyman has WWE by its nuts and says, CM Punk is going to be in the main event. And then CM Punk beats Randy Orton, and then you have the Dangerous Crew kind of run everything after WrestleMania, and then you have a whole year's worth of storyline where you have this faction of five really good, or was it five?
Four guys.
Four really good guys running roughshod all over the WWE, and then you can have dudes with attitudes in terms of John Cena, Dolph Ziggler. You can throw in Cesaro there as well. You can throw in Roman Reigns, and they're going against these guys the whole time. And maybe what you have is you have Ryback face the Usos at WrestleMania. Have them beat them.
Oh, right after you poo-pooed that whole idea?
Yeah, But if I'm going to be the booker, that's what I would do. And then you would have, say, you can have anybody, you know, then you have Dean Ambrose as the United States champion still. Then you have Big E Langston. You know, you can have Seth Rollins join Heyman's group. Have him be a Paul Heyman guy. So, I mean, that's what I would do as a booker. And then you have, like, all the guys that weren't getting pushes. And then I would be okay with Cena having a very slow build-up against CM Punk. Him being CM Punk for the championship, you know, far down the line. Because you know you're going to get a good match out of those two guys. And then you kill two birds with one stone. You destroy anything that Batista hasn't been able to do. CM Punk gets the main event of WrestleMania, you know, by himself without the three-way match. Or maybe even have Batista fight Hurt, and he kind of has this great comeback, and you make him a fan favorite right then and there, do a double turn, okay, and then CM Punk wins out. And then Batista has a spot where he's kind of going against...
Chase.
Yeah, and he's going against four or five guys that are just insurmountable. You pair him with John Cena, you can have Randy Orton kind of come back in and kind of be the guy that he's supposed to be, kind of be like a, not a sidekick, but like a secondary, really good kind of wrestler that can kind of get things done in the ring, a la like a Seth Rollins has been doing so far, what Dean Ambrose is doing. If I was a booker, that's what I would do. You see how easy that is? We don't get paid six figures to figure that out.
Yeah, well, that would never happen.
And it would never happen.
I don't even know if I would be able to get behind all that.
What?
100%. Whoa. Whoa. Just because I don't want to go all crazy, but I don't think it would be right for, of all guys, Brock Lesnar to end the Undertaker streak. To me, if someone's going to end that streak, it needs to be like a CM Punk.
Hulk Hogan comes back.
Or a Daniel.
Ends the streak.
Or a Daniel Bryan.
Yeah. Okay.
No, like someone that is like, that they're going to then put behind as the future and build around. That's what I'd like to see. So I wouldn't really want to see... Brock's lost way too much for him to be the guy that ends the streak. To me, it doesn't make any sense that
I would do it. I would just have CM Punk just for the wow factor. Just going like, what the hell just happened? I mean, it'd be more of a vehicle for CM Punk instead of Brock Lesnar, because CM Punk at the end of the night would win the championship.
Right.
And this is like just straight mark mode, what we're doing right now.
Yeah,
well, it's just dull what we're doing.
Yeah, no, it's good, but like, yeah, I wouldn't have Brock go over Undertaker. I don't think he, you know, I don't think he deserves it. I just say that. If that streak's kind of having a life of its own, and as much as I'm not like this huge Undertaker mark, if it's gonna end, I want it to be somebody that really deserves it. Because like we kind of talked about last year, it's a little bit more important than a title. You know, titles change hands 3, 4, 5 times in a year. But 20 whatever years on that streak, that's something that you go down forever. That's going to be legendary. And then not only just like legendary for saying, oh, this guy did it, but for the cachet that one would carry afterwards to say that the company believed in me enough to have me go over the Undertaker at Mania and end the streak, it's got to be somebody really special. So I can't get behind that part of it, but like the thought of that happening, this new dangerous alliance coming and running roughshod, yeah, that I would have no problem with that. The other thing I think you could do, because the problem if you did that would be then you're going to have this monster heel faction of the Dangerous Alliance, and you still, then what are you going to do with the Wyatts? See, I could see it make more sense that someone comes along and advocates for the Wyatts and gets the Wyatt, gets, like, Bray beats Cena, and then somehow they get Bray into that that three-way match. And, I mean, that really
was that the guy you were gonna say, because you mentioned
no,
two guys?
Right, no, it was Langston. And I think your Cesaro pick was better than Langston. I think Bray is the other guy that could do it, but you still then have a problem that now you got three heels in a match. Though Bray is, even though he's a heel, I mean, that guy's over like a motherfucker. So, I mean, it would be pretty, he'd be the guy that everyone got behind if that were to happen. And I think Bray could live up to it. Bray would be one guy that could live up to that.
Well, two things is that WWE is always kind of, and it's kind of been really put in the forefront lately, at least with the stuff that I read with the Masked Man, stuff that he writes on Grantland.com and stuff, and which is owned by Disney. That's my cheap plug right there. But one thing that he said and what other people said is that they're looking for kind of like the archetype of The Rock. You know, like a great character that people like and people don't like. And Bray Wyatt fits that mold. I mean, he is like the perfect, like, gray character because he has the chops on the mic. He does the work in the ring. And I remember 2 months ago, I was questioning whether this guy was any good in the ring because his first match was against Kane. Then he got hurt. And over the past, I mean, it's been very enlightening to see this guy in the ring and just the stuff that he does. I mean, the last pay-per-view that we saw, the Royal Rumble, he was just, I mean, he's ready now. I mean, it's like, it wasn't a case where Daniel Bryan did 60% of the work and Bray Wyatt did 40. I mean, it was 50-50.
Right.
And
at the Chamber match, he was great too.
Yeah. So there's always that too. I mean, I think that, you know, that's more in line. If we were to be like more of a reality type booker, Bray Wyatt, I think, is definitely in that spot. I think Roman Reigns should be in that spot if you're looking at the way the thing is now. The second thing I want to talk about, or what I want to bring up, is that was what you brought up, is you talk about Undertaker for the past, like, 20 years, you know, with this thing, and this is going to go down in legend. Now, do you truly believe that? Because I just feel it's like kind of like the winner gets to say what's important, and WWE, the streak is really kind of fueled, I think, by WWE. I've never been impressed with the streak. Am I impressed with what The Undertaker's been able to do and how he's kind of been a judge in the back? By all means, yes. I mean, I have total respect for him that way. But I have never been, if you talk about like the greatest matches of all time, or say like the top 10 matches, Undertaker doesn't, none of his matches even go in there.
Right. No, we're thinking on the same line here. But what I think that the streak is a tribute to him being the general of the locker room. And that's why I think that if he is going to lose that match, that it needs to be the guy that basically, to me, it should be like that. You know, you talk about torches being passed and stuff. If they're going to do that, that should be the handing of the torch to the guy that is going to lead the locker room for the next decade. And it cannot be John Cena, because I don't think that he is that guy. But someone like CM Punk that will go and stand up for other guys in the back. You know, shit, maybe, I don't know, he's not been around long enough to say if Bray's that guy, but someone like that, someone that they're going to kind of strap the carriage to and say, take us on for the next 10 years.
So who are your top five guys in that role that can take care of him for the next 10 years? Because first of all, Undertaker will not, his streak will always be intact. I mean, he's never going to lose that streak. I mean, that will never happen. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that too many times in real life, you know, in real sports. Like, 2 years ago, when the Niners lost in the Super Bowl, they never lost the Super Bowl. And it's like, it's kind of like a chink in your armor as a Niners fan. And me as a Niners fan, too. And the bad news about that was that I saw that with the Patriots. You know, like, they lost twice to the Giants. And if they beat, by the slimmest of margins, mm-hmm. and if they beat the Giants, you know, if they beat the Giants those two times, you're talking about the best team flipping ever.
Right.
You know, the best regime ever. So Undertaker will never lose that. But if Undertaker is ever going to pass the torch to anybody, which I think he should. You know, and here's kind of the knock against The Undertaker is that you've had guys, the major guys, have always passed the torch. Cena has passed the torch. Hogan's passed the torch. Cena has passed the torch. I mean, to Punk.
And then take it back?
I mean, he took it back, but I mean, that's the business. That's not Cena's fault. You know? I mean, you really think that's Cena's fault, or do you think that's more of the corporate? I think that's more of a corporate type thing. Cena lost to CM Punk for like a year straight.
Dude. Right, but I'll just. That was. I don't even want to get into that, dude. That he did, but that was his fake way of saying that he had to go down to the bottom to come back.
That's where
he got his ass kicked and kept getting title matches and main events.
That's his Kevin Nash losing to Rey Mysterio in WCW.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, okay, so Hogan passed the torch, okay?
To the Warrior.
He passed it off to Sting. Flair passed the torch. So if you want to put Undertaker... See, the funny thing about Undertaker is that Undertaker won't even go down as one of the top five wrestlers of all time. And I don't care what anybody says. He is not one of the top five wrestlers of all time. If he wants to be, I think he does need to pass the torch. But I don't think he ever will. But if he ever passes the torch to anybody in WWE right now, who are your top five guys that he should pass the torch to?
I don't even know if I could come up with five. Okay, CM Punk is technically under contract until June or July, so I'll put CM Punk there. I'll say Daniel Bryan, and I did read a few reports a couple months ago that he actually wanted, Undertaker wanted a match with Bryan. They wouldn't let him have it. Aside from that...
He wanted to have a match with Daniel Bryan because Daniel Bryan would make him look good, just like CM Punk made him look good.
Possibly. I don't know. Maybe. After that, I don't know that there's been anybody that's been wrestling long enough that has, like, the cachet that still has enough tread that could go to the future. I don't think anybody else. I don't think Randy Orton should be the guy. I definitely don't think Cena should be the guy. I don't know that there's anybody
Cena else. Doesn't need to be the guy.
I don't think he can, I don't think people would respect it. I could see Roman Reigns being that guy in a couple of years, but I don't think Roman Reigns is that guy right now. And I'd say the same thing about Bray Wyatt. I think maybe in 2 years, if they continue.
I mean, you don't think Roman Reigns is ready right now?
To be the guy that leads that locker room?
No, I'm saying for Undertaker to do the job for someone to establish them as like the guy for the next 10 years. I'm not talking about the locker room because the locker room is a totally different beast. I mean, hell, Hardcore Holly was a huge guy in the locker room way back when. Chris Benoit was a huge guy. I'm talking about him passing the torch to someone to lead the company when, you know, like he's done. Yeah.
Okay.
I
could say Reigns and Wyatt would probably be the other two. And I don't think there's really anybody else.
You don't see Daniel Bryan?
No, I said Punk, Bryan, Reigns, Wyatt.
Okay. And it's not a fifth guy, though?
I don't think I can go to a fifth.
Okay.
I'd be stretching it to say Cesaro.
Yeah, that's a big stretch. And Langston would probably be a big stretch, too.
Yeah.
So, all right, yeah. Hey, so, look, we've already been talking about this for an hour. And I don't know what the hell we've been talking about. But this is what happens. This is like, you know, one of the first times in the past 3 years where there was a Raw on the road to WrestleMania that was actually really good, which opens up a lot of different directions. And I think that's the one thing that me and you as wrestling fans always want, is we want a show when it ends to kind of go like, okay, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen here? What's going to happen there? And this is what established that. So even CM Punk not being there, for me to be a radio DJ, you know, pumping up Pink to All In, saying that, you know, it was the best rendition of Somewhere Over the Rainbow ever, I can say the same thing about, like, CM Punk not being there. Even him not being there has opened up a lot of avenues within the company in terms of what they have to do, because they knew going into Chicago that they needed to do something. And I felt that they accomplished that in terms of what they've done.
Do you think that's something that's going to go forward, or you think that's a one-off? You think that's just they're worried about Chicago hijacking the show, so they did that, and once they go back to their standard town, it's going to be back to status quo.
History says that it's going to go back to status quo. I mean, I'm just glad that there was a Raw.
There was one show.
There was one show, because on the road to WrestleMania, I mean, like last year, I mean, it was just dead. I mean, it was just doldrums. You know, it was like it was the dregs. You know, like, never a good show, wasn't entertaining. We were just waiting for WrestleMania to be over so we could have wrestling back again. This was the first time in a long time where there was a, actually, like, there was a good SmackDown, there was a good Raw. And I'm saying there was a good SmackDown because I liked what, you asked me if I liked what Batista did. I did like it. And I marked out a little bit for it. I'm glad that something changed within that. Now, I'm not saying that I'm a big Batista fan now, because I've never been a Batista fan, but at least they acknowledged, at least it wasn't the status quo of trying to push stuff off of us that would never work. And at least they're trying to do something a little bit different with Batista, and there's a little bit of intrigue within that. Now, whether that comes to fruition or not, I don't think it will, but at least it was something to watch. And you know, they said that, you know, Batista was going to come out and tell the fans that he felt what he felt, and I was looking forward to Friday because of that. And I didn't read Twitter because I wanted to, when I got off work, I wanted to see what would happen, you know, on SmackDown. So it did the job there. And then you have this Raw where a lot of things happen, and it's still kind of a slow play. I mean, Rollins didn't leave. He was standing there watching the whole thing, so you don't know what's going to happen next. And that's the whole thing, is like, you don't know what's going to happen next, where every road to WrestleMania before, you knew exactly what was going to happen. So I'm okay with that. And I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not happy with CM Punk not showing up. I mean, I really wanted him to show up, but I'm okay with the way things are going right now. I mean, it's like, if you take out, you know, I've kind of, instead of saying, like, this isn't right, CM Punk should be here, CM Punk should be there, this isn't right what the company is doing, I've accepted the fact that he is not there, and I want to see what WWE is going to do. I've accepted the evil of what WWE Creative is, and I'm not going to fight against it. I'm going to see what happens. But, you know, with this whole thing, I know when WrestleMania happens, there's going to be something that happens that, first of all, I'm always going to watch the Raw after, because that's when things go down. That's when, like, everything that you want to see does happen. But I'm gonna be kind of involved in the next month after WrestleMania to see what happens, because I know they're going to give you something. And if they don't, then they don't. And then maybe I give them 2-3 months, but that's kind of where I'm at, dude. It's like, I'm kind of, you know, without CM Punk being there, I don't know if a Daniel Bryan title run is going to make me happy. You know, I don't know if that's, I want, you know, you talk about the House of Justice. I want justice to be served. I want CM Punk to kind of get what's due to this guy. And he had the great 434 day odd run, and that appeased me. You know, I was happy because of that, because they finally gave this guy his due. And then they took the belt off of him, and then for like 4 or 5 months, they tried to do something else. And we always talked about Cena coming back, or Cena doing this, Cena blah, 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 blah. But it showed over the course of time that the fans did not get behind what Cena was doing, what they're doing with Cena. They weren't getting behind that. Who are they getting behind? They're getting behind the two independent guys. They're getting behind Daniel Bryan. They're getting behind CM Punk. And I don't think you can have Daniel Bryan as a champion without CM Punk being there, because you need to have the Macho Man to a Hulk Hogan. Now, Daniel Bryan's way better than Hulk Hogan, but there's no guy, there's no secondary guy that you want to see after that as an individual. Like, you have the Shield. If they put Roman Reigns in that role where he's like, you know, the singles guy that's really starting to get steam and take off, or even Seth Rollins the same way, but you're not going to, the Wyatt family's not going to break up anytime soon. And no matter what the Wyatt family does, it's still a faction. And it's a faction of three, which to me can never work. I mean, you need to, when you have a faction, it needs to be four or more. Because I'm an old school guy, and the opinion of my faction is going to be the Four Horsemen. It's going to be NWO with Hulk Hogan, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and you can throw an X-Pac in there maybe. You know, like, you have four or five like legitimate guys. You can't have that with the Wyatt family because there are only three. And three guys cannot run roughshod over a company.
Well, I mean, I think that there was a little bit of a hint today, and kind of what you were saying before. It looks like maybe they're kind of bringing Orton and Batista onto the same page. So that could be your monster faction if you start going.
If Evolution comes back, by all means, yeah.
Well, I don't think, unless they just call it Corporate Evolution or something, but I mean, Kane is the muscle with those two and Triple H, and then anyone else they bring in, I could see that being the team that just runs roughshod over everybody. Sure.
If they do that, then I'll watch. You know, if they do that, And if they're going to go to a faction lead at the top, then I'll be on board with it. But if it's going to be single here, single there, and it's going to be... Because John Cena has proven that you can't have the typical champion anymore where every month he faces someone new. Because he was the main event for all those pay-per-views, but who is the guy that you were following? You were following CM Punk. What was CM Punk doing? What was Daniel Bryan doing? What was The Shield doing as a team? And now that The Shield's gone, you know, as of now, maybe the Wyatt family steps in there. I mean, the Wyatt family can fill that role of being, like, the guys that you really want to watch as compared to having, like, a champion that faces someone new every week. I mean, hell. I mean, the low point of John Cena when he had his last title run was, I mean, he had a flipping program with R-Truth, dude. I mean, are you kidding me, dude? You know, R-Truth is, like, his main guy, and that's the main event? I mean, come on, man. You know, you can't have... Right now, you can't have a champion, a world heavyweight champion, facing someone else every month and a half. You know, it doesn't work because they haven't built these guys up to do that. There's not any legitimate, there's not a legitimate champion to do that, and there's not any legitimate challenges to do that as well.
Yeah. Come on, dude. You just run the Cena playbook. He comes out, he pretends to get hurt, and then he goes
and he tells
talks about how he never gives up,
and then he talks in the ring, telling the wrestler what to do so everybody can hear. Right. Yeah.
And then they have a match, and then he takes four finishers, and then he kicks out of them all. Then he does the other guy's finisher, then the other guy does an AA, and then he does an AA and he wins.
There we go. He's going to kick him around the ring a little bit and pin him, yeah. what match do you want to see? Okay, so Hall of Kayfabe. I have a guy, I don't know if you're going to get behind it, though. But I've been talking about this guy a lot, and he's kind of like my... like. De facto guy whenever I say, like, when we're smarks and stuff, and the reason why, like, you know.
Now, is this a true Hall of Kayfabe guy, or is this, like, a jobber guy? Is this job guy you've been talking about for a while?
No, it's going to be a little bit of both.
All right.
But I don't know if you can get behind this guy. So, you can cut me off real fast. But the reason why I want to put this guy in is because I have been talking about him a lot. And... it's funny that I'm putting this guy in, but if you have a guy that you think is like 100% should be in the Hall of Kayfabe, then go ahead and do it, because I don't know if you're going to get behind my guy.
The name that I came up today wasn't 100% guy. I could pull 100% guy. I definitely could, but I'm curious to see.
Okay. This guy and. The reason why I'm pulling this guy for the Hall of Kayfabe is because it really speaks as wrestling as a whole in terms of how stupid it can get sometimes. And actually, I just talked about this guy on Facebook with one of the guys that there's this like velvet painting exhibit of all these old-time wrestlers and stuff. So you have Coco Beware, you have The Ultimate Warrior, Mr. Perfect, Ric Flair, so it's like the gamut of all these guys, and it's on like flipping velvet paintings, right? And my whole thing is like, well, if you're gonna bring all these old guys and say you're a wrestling fan, then you need to take the good with the bad, because all those guys for the most part are good, and even the Ultimate Warrior at the time, like, you know, people liked him, but the guy that I want to put in the Hall of Kayfabe is gonna be one. He had a towel. He used to walk to the ring with a towel around his neck. It's going to be one Rugged Ronnie Garvin. And I'm telling you, that's why I was kind of like, you know. But here's the reason why.
Go ahead, because I only saw the Rugged Ronnie Garvin run, and I know that was the end of his run. But I know it has something to do with the Chase and Ric Flair. So
no, not only that. I mean, here's the thing. So when the Attitude Era first started off, and I was in, when I was working for the paper for San Jose State, we used to do this, like, kind of opinion page where it was point, counterpoint. And whether we, and one of them was, and I don't know what happened, but the opinion editor decided to.
Was that Mr. Bad Example by chance?
No, it wasn't him. It was actually, I was the managing editor at the time. And then the executive editor at the time, we did a point-counterpoint, which is, you know, you have the executive editor and the managing editor kind of going up against each other. And there's a lot of kind of things going on between me and this guy. There's a lot of kind of tension between me and him. Great guy. He's a really good guy. He gave me a chance. What happened was he slated me to be the sports editor for the next year. He's like, I want you to be sports editor. I'm like, well, who's going to be managing editor? He's like, well, this person's going to be managing editor. And this person was just like a straight kiss ass. I mean, she just kissed his ass to no end. And it's like, dude, she fucking sucks. I'm like, how the fuck are you going to make her managing editor over me? Well, as things would have it, she had a cancerous tumor in her larynx. So that she had to get her tumor removed out.
It's not a tumor.
It's not a tumor. My dad looks at vaginas all day long. So she wasn't able to be managing editor. So I became managing editor. And I'm sitting there going like, well, I should have been managing editor all along. Now, granted, there was better people. I wouldn't say there was better people. There was people that worked harder than I did when I was a staff writer. And one of them was Jeremiah. And Jeremiah actually should have been the managing editor because that guy busted his ass. But the executive editor did not like him. He liked me, and he liked the one girl. Well, the girl had a big old rack on her. So, of course, like, he's going to... Well, that's what I'm saying. So, but I'm starting to go, like, dude, I'm like, this girl, she's an amateur. You know, it's amateur night. You can tell. And, like, how the hell are you going to... I'm like, I am way more qualified than this girl is. So...
Not to interrupt you here, but did the meeting go something like this? John... I know you're the most qualified person to be the managing editor. But I've got some bad news for you.
Pretty much.
This chick over here has a rack.
A rack and no ass. And she was a hoe. But anyways, so we had this kind of point-counterpoint whether wrestling was real. And the one match that I, you know, and he of course had the one that's saying that it wasn't real. And I said that it was real, whether it was a real sport. And basically my whole argument was, in sports, the best guy usually is the guy that always wins. You know, the best, you know, they're the ones, who, if they're the best, they're going to move up high and they're going to win most of the games because they work the hardest. And what I kind of said was, like, you know, it was during that time when Mankind had his match. And he fell off the flipping steel cage, and it's funny that we're talking about the Undertaker. He took the choke slam through the flipping top of the Hell in the Cell cage, and I was like, "This guy has earned a spot because he's the best guy right now." I mean, he got over with the crowd. The crowd totally supports him, and he's done things that nobody ever saw before. So he deserves to be in that top spot, and so that's what I kind of all related it to. And the reason why I bring this up is because there was a wrestling fan in that paper, and I brought this guy up before. And this guy tried to come out of the woodwork saying he was like this huge wrestling fan because wrestling was popular at the time. And he was just like a straight mark, just like 100% mark. You know, like, oh, Sting's my favorite wrestler and stuff. I'm like, dude, I'm like, how the hell can Sting be your favorite wrestler? I'm like, and the thing that I said was like, do you know Rugged Ronnie Garvin? You know, like, you don't know Rugged Ronnie Garvin. I had to watch wrestling during Rugged Ronnie Garvin. I had to watch his crappy matches and watch his crappy promos. That's a flipping wrestling fan. And I wrote a column about that too, and it was like a three-tier thing where things that I was mad about. And one of them was you know, these wrestling fans coming out of the woodwork. It's like, dude, like, I've had to watch guys like Rugged Ronnie Garvin and Jimmy Jam, guys that totally sucked, but they were the necessary evil and they knew how to work. Mm-hmm. And it pretty much ended like, and then one of them was like, you know, all these people listen to gangster rap and stuff and trying to be hard. You know, they wanted to pretend that they were poor and that, you know, they came from bad beginnings. And it's like, you know what? I've opened up my refrigerator and there wasn't a lot of food in my refrigerator. My mom, you know, raised two kids on her own, you know, for a long time. And I remember opening up my refrigerator. I remember not having any money. I wanted to get a big wheel way back when, right? My mom saved up her money. We went to Toys R Us and she's like, what big wheel do you want? And I was like, well, I want the silver and black one, you know, that you could pull up the handle and it'd do a spin out on a big wheel. Now, back then, big wheels were huge. And if you were able to do a spin on a big wheel, that was it. You know, like, you were, like, made.
Yeah,
you know,
tassels on the handle, too.
Didn't have the tassels, no. That was my sister's big wheel. But she said at the time, she's like, I don't have the money for that. She's like, what about this one? So at, like, 4 or 5 years old, I knew that my mom didn't have a lot of money. And I knew that she busted her ass and she saved her money to buy, like, a... $85 Big Wheel. Now, $85 back in the 70s was huge. You know, I think I bought, I think it was like 65 bucks, you know, for that Big Wheel. But I was happy with that Big Wheel that I got. You know, and she's like, you know, and she even like went down the line. She's like, well, the seat doesn't move on this one, the one that you want. This seat is adjustable, this, that, and this. Like, she, and here's the thing, is like, my mom busted her ass to do this. And she was trying to make it okay for me to like something. But she didn't have to do that because I was like, okay, I know you don't have money. I know you're, this is something special that you're doing for me just because you want to do something nice for me. And I wanted the one that was like 100 bucks. And she got the one that was like 60. And I was happy with it, you know. And so I'm saying, like, you know, don't try to come at me saying that you're all poor and you came from bad beginnings, because I came from bad beginnings. You know, if you're trying to come up, you know, if you're trying to be like this huge gangster rap fan and you're saying that you're poor and all this stuff, and then your parents drop you off at in high school and they drop you off in their Mercedes Benz, I mean, give me a break, dude. You know, like, I have to walk to flipping school. You know what I'm saying? And like, my parents are well off, but I never, you know, at that time when I was in high school, you know, they were well off. They had the big old house up on the hill. They had the biggest house up on the hill. They had the nicest car, you know, because we are champions. But so, you know, so we had that. And then it was during the Columbine shooting too, where, you know, people were getting fights. You know, like, I've been in fights. You know, I've faced violence. You know, like, walk into your house, you know, to spend the weekend at your house. I almost got jumped by three guys one time. You know, walk into your house. You know, it's like, I've been in those situations before, right? And then you have this whole Columbine thing where you have two little punks, you know, come out with guns, and that's violence. I'm like, no, it's like, let's take it to the street. You know, let's bust some flipping knuckles and let's go. Let's come with some knuckles, you know? And so, and that's what I kind of relate to the Rugged Ronnie Garvin. It's like, if you're going to call yourself a wrestling fan, don't come out of the woodworks now. I mean, if you're a wrestling fan, you got to go through all the whole thing. You got to go through, like, Rugged Ronnie Garvin. You got to go through a Hillbilly Jim. You know, all these guys that totally suck.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
You had to watch them because that's the only thing that was
Nikolai
available.
Nikolai Volkoff.
Yeah. So that's why I'm putting in Rugged Ronnie Garvin, because he is like the benchmark.
For bad wrestling.
if anybody comes at you and says, if anybody comes at you and says, I'm a huge time wrestling fan, I'm like, have you ever seen Rugged Ronnie Garvin wrestle? And they're like, well, who's Rugged Ronnie Garvin? I'm like, then you're not a wrestling fan.
Shit.
So that's why I'm bringing the guy in the Hall of Cape. Thoughts, my man.
He sucked. He definitely sucked. I find it funny that JBL always references Orton doing the Garvin Stomp, and that's about all he had. And Orton Stomp is 100 times better than Garvin Stomp was.
No, it's not.
Nah.
Garvin actually had a good stomp.
Nah, come on.
it was methodical.
But Orton goes around part to part. Nah, Orton's way better.
To port, right?
Yeah. Filthy beggars. But, I mean, I think that by the time Garvin, you know, because I didn't watch WCW, or it might even have been NWA at the time when he was
NWA
having that run.
At the time, yeah.
So I only saw Garvin when he came to WWE. He's at the end of his rope. And then, you know, he was supposed
to be... Actually, you're wrong in that. Because Garvin was in WWF before. And then when he left WWF, that's when he became NWA champion. And that's
why. Well, I never saw him in his first run at WWE then. I just remember him coming back as kind of this... He had the flat top with the blonde.
That was his first one.
That guy was terrible.
Yeah, he was.
He had no moveset. He was a small guy that was supposed to be this brawler. Nah, he was bad then.
He was bad. He was very bad. And so his two claims to fame is one that I just talked about. For any wrestler, for any guy to come out and say that they're a wrestling fan, they're an old school wrestling fan. If you've never seen a Rugged Ronnie Garvin match and seen how bad he actually sucked, then you're not a wrestling fan in my book. You know, if you can say like, oh yeah, I've seen Rugged Ronnie Garvin. I've seen him with his towel, walking out, holding his towel, walking out to the ring and stuff with his red trunks and stuff. If you can't say that, then you can't call yourself an old school wrestling fan. And I know there's some like 60 or 70, I know your dad somewhere is talking about, he's no,
Nick Bockwinkel. Gorgeous George
and, not Adrian Adonis.
Greg Gagne,
yeah.
Vern Gagne,
yeah.
Greg Gagne was a twin.
So I know there's some guy going to go like, have you ever seen Vern Gagne wrestle? I'm like, no, I haven't. He's like, then you're not a true wrestling fan. I'm like, I don't want to be a wrestling fan if that's the case. But with the modern era of wrestling, you know, the rock and roll wrestling, the Attitude Era, the PG era that it is now, if you can't call yourself an old school wrestling fan if you've never seen Rugged Ronnie Garvin wrestle. And so that's one of his claim to fame. The other claim to fame is that he had a lot of good heat coming on him when he was chasing Ric Flair for the title. And the second, I mean, and even like Flair said, it was like they did the title switch in like Minnesota or something like that, where nobody knew who Rugged Ronnie Garvin was. So the house didn't sell out. And that was like one of the falls of Jim Crockett Promotions, was that the places that things happened, the guy wasn't hot there. Like, okay. Rugged Ronnie Garvin
was hot in the South, right?
Was hot in the South. They went to Middle America, tried to do it there, and the house didn't sell out because nobody knew who the hell he was. Like, people knew who Flair was, and they got a house there, but they would have had a bigger house, say, if it was done where Rugged Ronnie Garvin was popular. Because that was still kind of the last vestige of territories. And when Garvin actually won the title, he couldn't hold the mustard. And so they had to give it back to Flair. So those are his two main things. But the main reason why I'm putting this guy in is because I'm saying, like, he's like your benchmark. It's like, if you're going to call yourself an old-school wrestling fan, you've had to have watched at least three or four Rugged Ronnie Garvin matches. And I know you've watched three or four Rugged Ronnie Garvin matches on Superstars alone. And I think you've even seen him in, like, a Royal Rumble or something like that. So,
I think I did see him in a Royal Rumble.
Yeah, so that's why I'm putting the guy in.
All right. I mean, I have nothing to add, except for I will co-sign that he sucked.
All right, good, good. All right, so, man, we're an hour 20 in. You have a golden stick?
Golden stick. Let me see if I can hand out a golden stick here.
Yeah, you can.
I can. I just, you know.
Because you put it on me last week. You put a, you know, when I was trying to say something, you're doing the whole,
You want that one in there?
Let's put that one in there. That's a classic one, dude.
All right. Speaking of wrestlers that sucked, there was one Sergeant Slaughter back in the day, and this was in the height of the Cold War, United States versus Russia, and I don't remember exactly, but I think it had to be a feud with Nikolai Volkov. Was that what it was?
No, this, the promo actually was when he turned heel, and this is during the whole Iran or Iraq thing.
Yeah. And so there were some very common buzzwords in the 80s at the time, and he used them all to a T. And so he kind of copied off the old...
You got to go through the promo, though, dude.
Right. Well, I got to say what he's... He kind of took from the... I love the smell of napalm in the morning with the full... No, it's not Full Metal Jacket, but what it...
It was
Apocalypse Now.
Apocalypse Now, yeah.
And so he comes out with the deep inhalation, the... And then
what did he say after that?
I love the smell of napalm.
No, it wasn't napalm. It was like he was doing more like it was like the fresh like U.S. air or something like that.
And then he did the classic. He did the snot rocket in the middle of his promo. Glasnost.
No, you're missing the best one. So he comes out. He's like, fresh country air. I smell a rat. And it's
you, USA.
And then he does his
Glasnost. Perestroika.
And I remember it was after like a game one time. And we were in your mom's station wagon in the Grand Marquis. In the grand blue marquee that your mom had.
The Mercury Marquis.
Yeah. So like you're in the back seat and you're doing the whole... And your mom's like, Kevin, stop it, man. So like, you gotta stop doing that. And I'm just like, I was all quiet. I was like laughing because I had the whole like quiet laughing down, dude. Like nobody knew I was laughing, but I was. But yours like in the back the whole time, and you were a loud kid back then.
You're like lolling back then.
Yeah. No, that wasn't Lolling. That was Carlito's cousin. Okay. But yeah, Glasnost, and then he did this whole flipping anti-USA tirade, and that will go down forever as like one of the best promos ever. It was like one of the first promos that like we would like
quotable.
We would draw upon, and like just like every now and then, like if something like if you say something outlandish, it's more when I say something, and you'll come out and you'll hold one nostril
and you do the cough.
Yeah,
you do the cough.
You do the cough, yeah. And then you do the snot rocket. Glasnost. World peace. Very good. Very good. So, yeah. So I know you don't have a match either.
No.
Because you never do your flipping homework around here. But you're a busy guy. You know, I am. You're coaching. You're coaching maybe two teams now.
One right now, but soon to be two.
And you got lesson plans to do and all that good stuff, and then you got to get your beer drinking in and watch all the wrestling and stuff so we can do the podcast and everything like that, right?
Yeah.
Everything over there, everything's lovely. So we're finishing up Moosekill number 67, about an hour and 25 in. I don't know how we did that in the first place, but we got Better Have My Donuts over here on Bad News Ramen, and we'll see how everything shakes out.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, it was good Raw. It's been a pretty decent run. One of the better build-ups towards Mania in the last few years. So hopefully, I'm real curious to see where it goes now that they've gotten through this obstacle of the Chicago crowd. Not obstacle to me, because I think it's great, but in their eyes, I think it is. And so see how they kind of book this stuff going forward. And honestly, I really want to see what ends up happening with CM Punk, if the whole thing was just like just trying to give the Chicago crowd hope and kind of like sate them for a little bit, or if that was the seed for something bigger coming down the road. So it's going to be interesting next couple of weeks.
All right, man. So that's kind of cool, the Fat Five Freddy you right there. Yeah, good stuff, man. Good stuff today. We just got number 67. My man, Ben Amadeus over here, has broke the 50. I'm trying to hit 545. And we'll see you guys next week, and we'll be out for that time.
Once upon a time on this project, yo, I'ma have to wreck a whole say. I heard a whole say you a favorite rapper.
So what?
So I had to slap her and violate you. A Muslim drinking brew. Yo, nigga ain't no Mac 10. He's a 22. I seen you. You ain't say shit in ATL. Q, I like that diamond charm. I might cuff it, then sell it out like you sold Cam and Threat. A year ago, you wasn't talking shit about the West. Guess you knew your shit was done. Plus the one got you cable. Who banging? You ain't banging shit but the table in a circle, mad. Ain't got no choice but to fight. Ain't none of y'all motherfuckers got a chance on the mic. Anytime you come out, Joe, I'ma talk about you. Until you let that bitch in you. Walk about you. Any last words before I hit the switch from the immortal words of one? A bitch is a...